You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. Anyway, you slice it, markets were crashing for the last 2 days all around the world, on Wall Street, in Asia, in Europe. Markets really reached something of a bottom yesterday. The question is, will that continue? In Asian stock markets, there's been a bit of a recovery this morning after opening sharply down following the U.S. markets. In Europe, the FTSE index in London is up more than 0.5%. It's basically flat over in Europe. Frankfurt and Paris are marginally in positive territory. Oil, while being under $50 a barrel in the New York Merc yesterday, closed above 50. But Brent crude and other oil prices are fluctuating down there below $50. There's a crash in the oil markets along with other commodities. Joining us to discuss all of these deep trends in the midst of what looks like a fairly substantial capitulation this week is Michael Hunter, markets correspondent for the Financial Times, coming to us from London. Michael, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, John.
And Lisa Marganelli, fellow at the New American Foundation, author of Oil on the Brain. She joined us from Oakland, California. Lisa, thanks for being here.
Hello.
Lisa, I wonder if you'd elaborate something for me on the oil markets, just for people to understand what's going on. The New York Merc reports a price of $50 a barrel, but Brent crude is well under 50. And there are other markets where people buy oil, actual oil buyers, not speculators and commodities traders, where oil is trading lower. I've even seen quotes as low as $40 a barrel. Can you take these apart for us?
Well, people are trading partly they're actually trading on the some oils are sold in discount to others. So the places that people are selling the oil for $40 a barrel, it's usually oil that has more sulfur in it or is thicker or something like that. The New York market tends to be the most expensive, partly because the wealthiest consumers are here, but partly because they're trading a very very scarce kind of crude oil, which is WTI or West Texas Intermediate. So that usually trades at a more expensive price than others. It's very light, very easy to refine.
So $50 a barrel at this point is the ceiling, not the floor of the price at this point.
Exactly.
We're going to come back and talk about that in a moment. Michael Hunter, what's happening in Europe this morning? And if we could talk a little bit about the pressure on Citigroup, which yesterday fell below $5 a share and looks like it might actually be putting itself up for sale in some of its sector businesses.
I think, John, the alarm bells are still ringing on European equities markets. We're seeing support kicking in for the FTSE 100. Every time it falls around about 3,800 to a reading of 3,800 points, it starts to receive a little bit of a bounce and moves towards 4,000 again. There's a kind of technical level of resistance at 3,800. But in terms of the mood out there, it's still one of great caution, largely because people are a little bit worried about what the underlying health of Citigroup might actually be like. And until we get a bit more direction on that, I think we'll see this caution hanging around and these gains that we've been talking about this morning won't rise too much further from the kind of levels we're looking at now.
Is the confidence problem with Citigroup something to do with what they're not telling us, or is there just a fundamental lack of faith in a financial institution of the size of Citigroup?
I think it's probably a little bit of both. I think we would have liked to have seen a little bit more meat in some statements coming out from Citigroup, a little bit more of a clear sense of direction in terms of what they're going to do, whether or not they need to raise as much capital as some people are saying they're going to need to raise. But do remember also, John, that these fears are still rumours. We don't know exactly whether or not Citigroup is undercapitalised. The rumours are such that there are concerns that they might not be able to take many more big hits from subprime or from asset write-downs relating to that, or indeed anything else. We're not entirely sure yet exactly whether or not they are actually in trouble. It's just a fear that they might well be in the near future.
And Lisa, given the economic slowdown and all of this uncertainty in all of the world markets, clearly, OPEC cannot be pleased that the oil prices have gone down as low as they have. They've called another emergency meeting. What options do they really have at this point?
Well, they can cut their production, but one thing that happens when OPEC cuts its production is that if all of their member states are watching their their incomes shrink dramatically. And what happens when OPEC cuts production is that people start furiously trading on the side. They exceed their quotas on the side. And then that can actually drive prices down more because you have this sort of sloshy little pool of unofficial oil going out at the same time that you've got the more official stuff. So they really need to, if they're going to make a cut, which they're probably going to say they're going to make a cut, then they need to go out there and get everybody on board to actually make that cut. And that's going to be rough. And they also have, they just have a lot of pressure from their member states. Everybody from Hugo Chavez to Sarah Palin is watching their income of their state shrink dramatically.
And you know how those guys hang around together a lot.
I think they pal around a lot.
Yeah, they're real pals.
That's a joke.
But the flip side of this, Lisa, though, is, of course, that I just saw the national average for a gallon of gas in the U.S. is $1.99. So for consumers, there are lots of people who are jumping for joy at these prices, but there's a whole lot more for them to consider, right? Because it could come back to bite us.
Well, it will come back to bite us, I think. The other thing is that people are not exactly jumping for joy about the prices. I just saw that in September of this year, we drove 10.7 billion miles less than September of last year. So prices may be coming down, but I think people are sort of sitting on the front step and looking at the car rather than driving it. So that's kind of, that would be the first bummer. I think the second bummer is that what happens when oil prices fall is that oil producing countries stop drilling holes in the ground to keep their production up. And that means that their production starts to fall, which makes a lot of sense. Nobody wants to be throwing money into the ground when the oil coming out of it isn't worth anything. But what that means is that when the economy does recover and starts to tick up, we're going to hit very quickly kind of a limit on oil production, and prices are going to go up very high again.
Well, Michael Hunter, do we have any indication that in emerging markets that, as Lisa suggests, are really sort of strapped, that they've committed themselves to this high oil revenue, both in terms of price and in terms of production, any indication that countries like Venezuela, Mexico are beginning to default on some of their obligations, and so the oil price crash has a sort of an ancillary effect on the financial markets?
Not yet, not in terms of emerging markets, which are getting a shoeing, by the way, John, at the moment, largely because investors are moving money away from anything that's even vaguely risky into government debt and other safer investment instruments, including gold, which is, of course, doing very well at the moment. It's too early to say yet whether this oil price has a read across into the national balance sheets of those kind of countries. The more sensible ones have kept enough in reserve down the years to be able to weather storms like this. And don't forget, as recently as this summer, we were seeing oil knocking on the door of $150, which has given people a little bit of wriggle room. And there are people out there who are telling us, albeit off the record at the moment, that they can't really see this kind of weakness in oil prices being sustained in the medium or long term.
So we will pause at $40 or $50 a barrel and then move to some sort of price stable rate that may be in the 80s or 90s, something like that?
Well, again, I mean, it would be a braver man than I to actually put a number on it. And many people were putting 40 in play, even in research notes we've been looking at today.
I mean, not brave, Michael, just an idiot. That's me. That's all I need to do. Back to Citigroup for just a minute. You want to venture a guess? You won't guess on the price of oil, so you're not brave. But what about Vikram Pandit at Citicorp? Does he stay or go?
Well, again, I think Mr. Pandit's under quite a lot of pressure. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But I think, again, you'd need a very, very brave man to want to step into his shoes. And quite often in the upper echelons of the corporate world, this amount of danger can actually help protect somebody in terms of their succession. I can't imagine anybody being keen to take over his job at the helm of that company right now.
The New York Times suggests that $8.3 trillion has vanished from world markets in the combined decline of stock markets over the last 13 months and a decline in mutual funds that trade in commodities. Where does that $8.3 trillion go?
Well, a lot of it's gone into gold. Some of it's kind of gone up in smoke with the assumption that the world economy allowed itself to make that U.S. house prices would carry on rising forever. So a lot of it is accounted for in that way.
We'll be feeling that pain, the next several years, maybe a decade. Lisa Marganelli, quickly before we go, you mentioned two bummers. Any other bummers from out there in the Bay Area? No. All right, I'll give you a break on that since we got to go. But, they know about bummers out in Oakland, California. Michael Hunter, markets correspondent for the Financial Times, thanks for joining us. Lisa Marganelli, of course, a fellow at the New America Foundation, our friend and author of the book Oil on the Brain. Thanks, guys.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.